So we're going to talk about segmental bone defects. Now, most of what I'm talking about is going to pertain to traumatic bone loss. Now, you can, of course, have segmental bone defects as a result of tumor resection, for instance. But most of what, you know, I'm going to talk about is about trauma. For instance, open tibia, bone loss, open femur bone loss, segmental bone defect in, you know, in a long bone. So what are the challenges here? Well, I mean, obviously it's, you know, trying to decide whether you should save the limb or not, right? I mean, these are cases where if you have significant, you know, additional issues, host problems, immunocompromise, whatever, then, you know, occasionally in a bad open tibia, vascular injury, segmental bone loss, you know, you may be thinking about an amputation. But reconstructive segmental bone loss really comes down to, I think, three or four things. So, number one, small defects can sometimes be shortened, like less than a centimeter. Number two, slightly bigger defects, like up to 3 centimeters, you can do in situ autologous grafting or an equivalent type osteoinductive, osteoconductive type of material. And, you know, if you have bigger defects, 4, 5, 6 centimeters, 7 centimeters, then that's kind of like Ilizarov, you know, bone transport, bone lengthening territory. And then if you have stuff that's really big, then you're either talking double transport or you're starting to think about vascularized fibular grafts or some type of vascularized bone transplant. So, you know, those are the major options. So number one, so small defects, shortening. Well, this is clearly an option in the humerus. I mean, we will shorten the humerus even for closed fractures when we want to get good bony contact. But you can do it in the lower extremity. Typically, we like to keep, you know, people out to length. People don't like limb length discrepancies in the lower extremities. You know, something that you can do for really small defects, less than a centimeter, because if you have a trade-off of having a small defect, a small limb length discrepancy, and getting a bone to heal without a whole lot of extra surgeries and questions, that may be preferable than, you know, sort of having to come back, bone graft might not work, bone may not heal as well as it does under compression and shortening. So for small defects, it's not a bad option. But for bigger defects, you know, certainly bigger than a centimeter, I think we start to think about other options. So in situ grafting clearly is very versatile, fairly easy. A lot of surgeons know how to do it. And honestly, the size of the defect is not absolutely limited to certain treatment option, like in situ grafting. I kind of said 3 centimeters, maybe to 6 or 7, but I mean, you could go bigger and still use it. It's just that it's hard to get that much graft, right? And you can't just take a box of cancellous allograft and dump it in there and expect something like that to heal. You need something, either autogenous graft or an equivalent type of material. So usually we're talking about, you know, sort of moderate size defects, small to moderate size, that we'll use in situ grafting. I mean, I've certainly done it for 3, 4 centimeter defects, but, you know, when it's like 5 or 6 or bigger, then I usually don't. And of course, you know, these can be done using iliac crest, using Rhea. Those are some of the two big you know, locations that we will use for that type of defect management. Of course, masculine methods can be used. That's when you are using like an antibiotic spacer, like an antibiotic cement spacer. You come back after a few weeks, you take the spacer out, your sort of that membrane that forms around the spacer oftentimes has you know, stem cells and can assist your healing if you dump a bone graft in there. So that's a popular technique. We use it frequently. It works really well. For instance, if you have a tibia fracture with a bone defect and you have a like a tibial rod in place, and you don't want that to get infected, and it was an open tibia. I mean, why not have some antibiotic cement in there? It helps to sterilize things. It also helps to maintain the space, right? So you don't just get fibrous ingrowth. And this way, when you come to take it out, your space is right there. And then you just put your bone graft in, freshen up the ends, whatever. Now, for bigger defects, we do often think about, you know, bone transport. One thing also worth mentioning, sometimes you can also do an acute shortening where you take a bone defect, soft tissue defect, you acutely shorten them, and you have to be a little careful with this. If you shorten them too much, you can get vascular kinking and outflow problems. But if you're careful and you're comfortable with this, sometimes you can shorten these patients acutely and then just do a gradual lengthening, you know, through a separate osteotomy. Or you can keep them length stable. And for large defects, you can do a transport, right, where you sort of, you know, you do an osteotomy, maybe at the proximal tibia, let's say, and then you transport the middle segment down into a distal, mid to distal third defect, where we commonly see defects. Doing this over a nail can improve your issues with alignment that are more problematic with, you know, ring fixators without a nail. And keep in mind, when you do a transport, you then have to dock, often bone graft, and then you have to oftentimes keep some type of fixation for a very long period of time. And with an Elizarov, it can be many, many months in the ring fixator. Whereas if you lengthen over a nail, once your lengthening is done, you just lock the nail in the position where it is, then your fixator can come off if you use the fixator for lengthening. And there are advanced devices which the nail actually does the lengthening for you, but we won't get into that. The principles essentially are similar. And then there's vascularized fibular grafting. Now, the issue with that is it's very center dependent, surgeon dependent. I mean, you go from grafting, which almost anybody can do, to now talking about a procedure which is really successful only in a few hands, right? Not everybody can just go and do a vascularized fibular graft. But it's an immediate source of instant bone graft. It can hypertrophy and provide structural support as it remodels. And it can immediately help you deal with, you know, fairly large defects. So those are the main reconstructive options. Keep in mind, of course, you know, the earlier reconstructive tools you need to know are debridement, you know, just the boring stuff. But, you know, this stuff is really critical. You'll never get to the point when you can get to reconstruct a bony defect if you haven't been able to keep it sterilized in the first place and it gets infected. And those steps are really important early on. Dead space management, antibiotic beads, antibiotic spacers, you know, wound closure, early wound coverage, getting your plastics teams involved and understanding the importance of not letting these things get infected early on. You know, that stuff is really important. And I think that's about it. So those are the major points I think you need to keep in mind. Thanks.